This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 22nd of June, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for the next hour, Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We are broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio in the centre of Sheffield. The programme's going out on FM radio and through our internet live stream. And however you're listening, we're also available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. And talking podcasts, last Friday's show featured Steve Rimmer, Chief Executive and Co-Founder of Tickets for Good. That was a fascinating discussion with Steve, so if you missed it, catch the podcast on the Sheffield Live website. Who's on today? Well, I'm really thrilled that we have Kate Welch, OBE, Chief Executive of Social Enterprise Acumen. She'll be joining us down the line in just a few minutes. We'll get Kate on the phone. Before we do that, what's been going on in business? What's been going on in social enterprise? Well, quite a lot. First of all, thousands of jobs may well be at risk or could even be lost after Airbus threatened to leave the UK. In frustration, they expressed frustration at the lack of progress by the government in the Brexit negotiations. Some more positive news is that young entrepreneurs are choosing social impact as their number one business priority, again, according to another new report. There have been quite a few reports about this, but this is a new report by HSBC Private Banking. Their Essence of Enterprise report found that the younger generation of entrepreneurs are really interested in making a positive impact on society too. They said 24% of entrepreneurs that they surveyed for their report, who are aged under 35, are motivated by social impact. And this report is in its third year. It's an in-depth study into the motivations and ambitions of entrepreneurs. And it researches the views of 3,700 successful entrepreneurs in 11 countries. The report has also found that this new generation of entrepreneurs is embracing angel investing and that they view it as a way to connect and to collaborate with peers. It was World Wi-Fi Day this week. That was on Wednesday. And Sheffield City's free Wi-Fi went live on World Wi-Fi Day on Wednesday. So this is Sheffield's first ever free high-speed Wi-Fi. It's gone live across the city centre. It's called Sheffield Free Wi-Fi. And the idea is for the service to help Sheffield City Council to meet its ambition to be one of the best connected cities in the country. Hopefully it will make the city centre more vibrant too, according to the council. And IDAC Networks, a Sheffield-based business, are providing the free Wi-Fi service. They've installed 220 pieces of super-fast and ultra-fast broadband equipment to council-owned streetlights and street furniture. And the first phase of the Wi-Fi network covers the retail district, the theatre district, including Fargate, the Peace Gardens, the Winter Garden, Tudor Square, Pinston Street and the Moor. And more phases are set to be launched in the months ahead, with the council saying that almost all of the city centre will be covered by November 2018. The Sheffield Star has reported that local firms will be able to bid for a share of £11 million worth a year of contracts after Sheffield City Council pulled out of its IT contract with Capita. The Star also reported that Mark Gannon, the council director in charge of IT, said contracts up for grabs would include upgrading the authority's systems, migration and transition work, and about half of the third-party contracts which Capita had outsourced to other firms. More on that, go to Sheffield Star and the business section. Business awards are now open for entries. Now, there are a number of awards that have just opened for entries and well worth applying to. First of all, the Sheffield Business Awards. Now, you might be well aware of those. One of the most prestigious events in the region and an opportunity for businesses to promote your achievements during the year. Raise your profile, gain recognition. And every year, businesses of all sizes and across sectors compete for an award. The awards are in their 17th year and well established. established as a big awards ceremony for Sheffield businesses. This year's event, Awards Do, will be held on Thursday the 29th of November at Ponds Forge, and the awards are free to enter. They're open to any business based with an S postcode. Find out more details, sheffieldbusinessawards.org.uk. And the closing date is the start of September, so you do have a bit of time, but start thinking about it right now. Also open for entries now, the 2018 Barnsley and Rotherham Business Awards. Now, there are a number of award categories there. Again, open to businesses of all sizes and all sectors, again, with an S postcode within South Yorkshire. And to all companies who are members of Barnsley and Rotherham Chamber of Commerce too. Deadline for those, Friday the 31st of August. And to see the categories, to download the entry form, go to brawards.co.uk. I'll tweet the links out to those and Sheffield Business Awards at the end of the programme today. Also open for entries now, the Social Enterprise Awards. These recognise business excellence and significant contributions to society. And raising an award raises your profile, strengthens your brand, and brings you new business. According to Social Enterprise UK, who are running the awards, they're working with Social Enterprise Northern Ireland, Social Enterprise Scotland, and the Wales Cooperative Centre to deliver the awards. More details about those at socialenterprise.org.uk/UK-social-enterprise-awards-2018 to see the full details of those and to find out how to enter and the awards criteria. So plenty for you to get your teeth into there in terms of applying for awards, and well worth taking a look at all of those. And you've got a bit of time to get your entries together, so take a look now, don't leave it till the last minute. Now, what's been going on in your business, your social enterprise? What have you been up to? How's your week going, your year going? How's your summer going? It's the start of summer now. How exciting. We're always keen to hear from you. So if you're doing something innovative, interesting, wonderful, amazing, fantastic, then get in touch. If you've got a comment that you'd like to make about what's going on in business and social enterprise, what's going on at local level, regional level, national level, how it affects you, then get in touch. If you want to put yourself or someone else forward to be on the programme, get in touch as well. Whether you're running a business, whether you're running a social enterprise, we're always really keen to hear from you, and it's well worth getting in touch with us. And you can reach me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. You can send a text to 07 904 272 200. You can find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. You can send an email to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. So do get in touch. Well worth doing so. We'd love to hear from you. So it's time now for us to play a quick track of music. We're going to play something by Thievery Corporation. And this is Voyage Libre.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And joining us on the line now, we have Kate Welch, Chief Executive of Social Enterprise Acumen CIC. Kate, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. The sun's shining and the world's a great place at the moment.
Wonderful, excellent. The sun's shining here in Sheffield too. So can you introduce yourself and what you do and what Acumen does, please, Kate?
So, as Jamie said, I'm Kate Welch. I'm, I suppose, a founder and serial social entrepreneur. So I've now started a number of social enterprises. And Social Enterprise Acumen is the latest of those. And essentially what we do is we support other people with ideas about starting social enterprises, or we help other organisations that want to find ways to either increase the social impact they have or become more enterprise and pricing and find sort of better trading models and things of that sort.
Right. Great. OK. So can you give us some examples then of the types of organisations you've worked with and how you've helped them to find, say, better trading models, for example?
So let's take lovely Just for Women. They're an amazing organisation in the northeast of England up near us. They've been working with women who are usually victims of domestic violence or abuse, have a lot of mental health issues. And they just started doing counselling and support, and then looked at crafting, making things, just as a way of being able to actually involve people and start conversations. So we started to work with them, and they're now at the stage where they've moved from a very small shop, they're moving to bigger premises, they're making pillows and a lovely Northeast product, the Proggy Mat, and selling them into Knightsbridge and parts of London to better tourist destinations to get more money for it. And moving into bigger premises, looking at increasing, well, they have bought more sewing machines and generally increasing what they do, so they bring earned income in from selling those products, which supports the more charitable and social work that they actually do. So that's one example. We've just been helping a small group take on a cafe by converting a building in Bowling Park in Bradford. And so that's, I was down just last week. It's looking great. And we've been helping with their mobilisation plan because we know a little bit about running community cafes. And they're going to be ready to open for the summer and start helping people in that area and creating some jobs and volunteering opportunities. So that's just a couple of examples.
Right, fantastic. Those sound great. And those really bring it to life as well in terms of the support that you're providing and how that actually makes a difference. And how those social enterprises work and generate income to deliver impact. So you've been doing what you do for a while, and you've been recognised for what you do, Kate, as well. And so you've probably faced significant challenges, but also helped organisations face significant challenges. What's the biggest challenges, in your view, that social enterprises and social entrepreneurs, people leading social enterprises, are dealing with? And what do they come to you and say, Kate, we really need assistance with this? What's the biggest cry for help or ask or call for your advice?
So probably the biggest actually relates to a personal experience. For me as well, because before I ran social enterprise Acumen, I started Acumen Development Trust that helps long-term unemployed people into work. And that's still going 15 years on, and it's helped 16,000 people find jobs. But we have to work in a space, which most social enterprises do, which is really that area between market failure and the public sector, and trying to find a way to earn income to help some of the most vulnerable people in society. So you try and work with public contracts, but those aren't easy, and often there's not actually much money in them, and they're very hard to deliver. So we were delivering the work programme contract that the government put out some years ago, having been good at helping people into work, but they don't pay you until you've helped somebody and got them in a job for 6 months. So the big challenges people have are understanding how to earn that income, but also managing the cash flow and the implications that that has for them, at the same time as really delivering a really good quality service to the people that they want to help.
Yes.
So I've been there, been through the having to manage money very closely, and we get quite a lot of that with people. So we get people who I'm working with Derwentside Mind at the moment. Their traditional routes for funding have just about disappeared, so they need to find some new ways of working. So what we're doing is using our experience to help them start to look at what they do that can be really valued by people. So they're preventing suicides, they're helping people improve their mental health, they're stopping sickness, absence at work for people. So how can we help them find ways to generate income with that, but in a manageable fashion so that it doesn't lead them to cash flow issues and problems that way?
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest issue for most of the organisations we work with.
Right, yes, and you've really hit on something there that I know affects so many social enterprises. You talked about social enterprises often being in the space between market failure and public sector delivery, and you've talked about being paid often quite a long time after you've incurred the costs of delivering the work, and that can be a massive barrier to entry for social enterprises who are sort of encouraged to bid for, say, public sector contracts, or it can be a challenge in terms of people think and feel, how could we possibly exist and deliver this and incur the costs and be paid, as you say, perhaps 6 months later. Do you think that the social investment sector, which is appearing to grow in the UK, is supportive of social enterprises? Do they step into the breach in terms of funding cash flow and working capital requirements? Are they fully supportive of this, or could they be doing more?
So I think that's a really good question and plays into some of the other work that we do. So I happen to sit on the board of the North East Social Investment Company, which is a company that was set up to... it's a holding company that manages a fund that somebody else delivers in social investment. But that was exactly why we did that. It was about being able to find ways to support people who might not be able to take on a contract, might not be able to buy a building, might not be able to bridge through a gap in service, in contract or something of that sort. And having spent a bit of time recently with a lot of social investors, because we're also working with a particular contract through the Connect Fund to improve the infrastructure for social investment in the northeast of England, the investors are really ready to do that, and they're really willing and able to help. One of the challenges is the reluctance of the social enterprises, and particularly the kind of older charity structures and often the boards of those organisations, who are worried about the risk. And yet social investment would be a really good way of them being able to actually maximise their impact or increase their impact and manage that money at the same time. And it pushes people to being more businesslike in the way they operate. So I think the willingness and the availability of social investment is there. The actual issue is with those of us in the sector.
Right, that's a really good perspective and a really interesting perspective to hear, because if the trustees or the board of an organisation are very reluctant to take on social investment, then it's not necessarily the social investors who where the fault lies if social investment isn't getting out there. And there's a lot of debate and discussion in the sector at the moment, isn't there, about whether investors are getting the money out or whether people are applying for it and so on. And an impact. So thank you for that. That was really, really interesting. I wondered if you could give our listeners some more tips then about resilience, because you've worked with so many organisations through thick and thin, if you like, and helped them to weather the storms of external events, and there's a lot of uncertainty around for businesses and social enterprises at the moment. We've heard on a national level about organisations saying, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen about Brexit, so we might be moving to mainland Europe, but down at a local level, uncertainty percolates through. So any sort of resilience tips that I could ask you about, Kate?
I think that's really interesting as well, because resilience, actually emotional resilience, was one of the first things that I introduced into the first social enterprise I set up, and that was as much as anything for the people we were working with. And that was around people not being able to cope with things well, not having the toolkit, the ability to bounce back from things that happen. And resilience is exactly that. It's that personal and organisational, and also we now talk a lot about community resilience, that opportunity, that strength to weather the storms, because storms will happen, whether it's internal, external, you know, big things like Brexit, whether it's just that your local council cuts not very likely at all, but, no. You know, cuts back on a particular fund. If you, first of all, plan ahead, so I'm really interested in organisations looking hard at the future and trying to, you can't always predict it, of course you can't, but if you are foresighting out there, the better the handle you've got on what might happen, the better the opportunities. Being prepared for it financially, so that whole set of planning and getting financial forecasting. Lots of organisations in our sector, social enterprises and charities, tend to do a budget, and it's a budget. as opposed to having some form of financial forecast, whether it's perhaps the best, worst, middle case, or some way of being able to kind of look at different scenarios and can you manage through those. But there's also a huge thing about your own personal resilience for both leaders of organisations and staff. So we actually do train people in emotional resilience, because it's that bit of taking away from, oh, this is awful, we're never going to be able to get through this, to the point where you say, well, we can get through, we are getting through this, and these are the things that were put in place. And we've actually ended up with a number of organisations, and I did it for my first social enterprise as well, as developing almost like a company turnaround plan. So it's that sense of what do you need to do if you're in a crisis situation or you see something coming, and you've got a relative limited number of options. You can cut costs, you can improve sales, you can improve your profit margin. But if you look very hard at how you do all of those things, you're planning for that future in the best possible way. So I think for me, resilience is first of all about mindset, but second, it's about actually putting plans in place and trying to forecast as far ahead as you possibly can. Even if that changes, at least you're doing it, and that's much better than not doing so.
Yes, most definitely. So that is fascinating. So putting plans in place, and you've talked about the difference between a budget. And sometimes people's budgets can be very aspirational and almost wishful thinking, rather than a realistic financial forecast that covers best and worst case scenarios and looks at how you would deal with those and plans ahead to how you might deal with those. And you've talked there about emotional resilience, and I think that's a really good point to raise in terms of how people can deal with unexpected events and how you can almost expect the unexpected and learn how you might cope with it. And if you're in that sort of turnaround situation where time might seem to be limited and options might seem to be limited, there are things that you could do rather than running around like a headless chicken or whatever. So you actually actively train people, you're coaching people in emotional resilience as part of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Headless chickens do tend to run round and round in circles and then fall over. If you can see a path through, even if that path might look complicated and difficult, it's rarely as difficult as you think it is. Lots of people kind of catastrophize and always think of the worst case. And there's always that little bit more time, and there's always that little bit more opportunity than you think there might be. So ploughing your way through, it's about looking for solutions. You understand the problems, but you're looking for the solutions rather than dwelling on the actual problems.
Right, yeah. Okay, so look for solutions rather than dwell on problems. And again, great advice there, actually, and we do have a tendency to catastrophise, and it's something that will resonate, I think, with loads of business leaders in social enterprises and in ordinary businesses too. Fascinating. Thanks for that, Kate. Can I ask you then, we talked at the start of today's radio programme about a number of awards that our listeners might like to apply for, including Social Enterprise the annual Social Enterprise Awards. And of course, you have been recognised and given a number of endorsements and a number of honours, Queen's Award for Enterprise Promotion, Good Service Award, OBE for services to social enterprise in Northeast England. What's your take on awards and public recognition? Does that help you? Does that help your organisation? Are awards something that you encourage people to apply for?
I think it's an interesting question. I've said that several times now. But with awards, so there are kind of two different types of awards.
Yes.
So some of them, you're nominated. Yeah. I still don't know who nominated me for the OBE. I do know who nominated me for the Queen's Award. But both of them were nominations from other people.
Yes, yes.
And there's a bit where you kind of go, wow. I was quite taken aback and absolutely thrilled and privileged to receive those. And they're personal awards, so there's a little bit of a, but hang on, it's not just me, it's all the other people around me. So I want those to be seen very much as the team effort that they absolutely are. But they've opened doors, massively opened doors. So I can, there's all sorts of lists I get invited to, events and all sorts of other things like that, that those are just so helpful with. So accept them, I would always say. The other thing then are the awards that you actually apply for. And the best ever award that we applied for was when I was running Acumen Development Trust in East Durham. So at that point, East Durham was the old district area that was the fourth most deprived place in the UK after three London boroughs. Yeah. And we applied for the Enterprising Britain Awards, and we won the most enterprising place in Northeast England. And what that did for that community was completely change the narrative that people had. So instead of saying we live in the fourth most deprived place, they were saying we're the most enterprising place in Northeast England. And that was massive in terms of what it gave those people. So that, as an award, was phenomenal because it brought a whole community back from feeling as though it had had the stuffing knocked out of it, old mining communities, areas that, you know, had right from before, well, the early closures in the 60s, the miners' strike in the 80s, the closure of the pits in the 1990s, had been saying, isn't this dreadful, isn't this awful, there are no jobs for us and all the rest of it, to being the most enterprising, is just transformational. Mm. So awards like that, that in essence you're sharing on behalf of perhaps the whole community, the clients you work with, the people you're helping, your staff and everyone, are amazing and should absolutely be celebrated. So I would always say to people, go for it, but don't focus on the award. The award should be the byproduct of the work that you actually do. Yeah. But that recognition is really powerful, really helpful, and can it's not going to do any harm whatsoever in winning contracts or if you go for grant funding or whatever, being able to actually show people the value that you actually deliver.
Right, yes, and that's a really good point, a really great point to make. Thanks for that, Kate. Super. Now, I know in your own education you've attended and participated in education at a number of institutions, and one of those is the University of Sheffield. We're speaking with you. You're in the northeast of England. We're here in Sheffield. But you studied physics, I understand, at the University of Sheffield. Am I right?
You are right. I can't say I was a brilliant physicist. I love Sheffield. So of all the cities, I'm not really a city person, but I love the city of Sheffield. And I lived out in Nether Edge, and mm-hmm. just that whole kind of being able to walk out in the parks. I run guides as a spare time occupation, hardly spare time, but I love doing it. And we often camp in the Peak District.
Yes.
Just that whole opportunity to be part of a vibrant city, but also a place that's so connected to the countryside, was phenomenal. And I was very involved. Probably why I wasn't very brilliant at physics was that I was quite involved in the Methodist Church, and I chaired a joint Christian Society's coordinating council. I'm trying to remember, that was very exciting in the day. But I've always seemed to have been involved in kind of connecting people together. So what's great is I still have a lot of friends in Sheffield. We're actually doing some work in the area, and then we're also doing some more work in Doncaster as well. So I can kind of pop off on the way into Sheffield and see people. So I'm a bit jealous of you, really, Jamie, though I love the northeast now. But Sheffield was a great place to be.
Super. Oh, wonderful. That's lovely to hear that. Thank you. And Kate, you talked about working in Doncaster there as another example, and your work takes you all over and to lots of interesting places, and as you say, perhaps sometimes awards that you didn't put yourself forward for, or accolades in that case, where you didn't know they were coming, have opened doors for you to speak, and that's of course great for the profile of the organisation that you lead. It's about everybody. We recently had an exchange of information where I was picking your brains for a resource about social enterprises bidding for public sector contracts, and you offered some really helpful tips for any social enterprises when it comes to bidding for contracts and responding to invitations to tender. And I wonder if I can ask you briefly to give some advice for anyone listening running a social enterprise who would like to try and secure public sector contracts. If you could give some words of wisdom for how to prepare to put in a bid and how to put in an excellent bid.
Absolutely. And the Doncaster contract, ironically, was exactly that. It was a tender that came out. So So maybe that will serve as a bit of an illustration. So the first thing to do is you have to find those contracts, and you find those by registering with portals of various sorts. And you register using a whole set of kind of keywords and things that you're interested in. So the first thing for us is always, is this the right thing for us? Does it fit with our vision, our mission, and the way that we want to operate? And we have we actually have a bid no bid matrix that we use. So we sometimes will choose not to bid for a contract, and that might be for a whole range of reasons. It might be about not fitting with what we do. It might be about us not having the capacity. It might be that the finances of it don't stack up. There was one that we decided not to bid for, supporting a local authority with helping social entrepreneurs start their businesses, but there just wasn't enough money in it to make it worth our while. So we didn't bid for it at all. Mm-hmm. So we make choices not to bid sometimes. I think that's really, really important as the very first starting point. Once you've actually got to the point of deciding to bid, one of the other things that's really helpful is we've developed a set of kind of the core documents. So most contracts require you to supply accounts, policies, perhaps your governing documents, and a set of pieces of information. So we have that ready to hand, your insurances, all of those sorts of things, any quality standards that you hold and all the rest of it. So that information is held centrally and easily available. We don't have stock answers because one thing, this takes me right back to exams, read the question. So it sounds very simple and very trite, but so many people don't answer the question properly. So you've got to get your head round what the person who's written the bid is wanting to buy. They're here to purchase a service or a product from you, and you need to be supplying what they want. And I have to say, a very nice accolade back from Doncaster Council was, you won that bid because you really got what we were, you understood what they were wanting. Ironically, the contract was called Developing the Business Acumen of the Third Sector in Doncaster, and they blind marked the bid, so they didn't know which organisations were bidding. And then they realised we were called Acumen, so that was quite a nice fit at the end. But
fantastic.
It was about understanding it. And then you follow the rules. If they say you've got 200 words, you write 200 words. So we do a lot of writing, a lot of editing. We normally do it. I don't have a large team of people that work. We're only four strong as an organisation, but we kind of cross-check. So one of us will write something. We'll plan it all together. We'll design what we're going to do, and then we'll share the writing and editing. And it takes several iterations to get that bid right. And then you make sure you submit it to the deadline. I will hold my hands up. I'm pretty good at getting something in half a minute before the deadline, which is not the right way to behave. But sometimes it's what happens. Because one of the challenges with contracts is you have to do those alongside the delivery of all the other work that you're doing.
Yes, you do.
And we're not big, so that we don't have a business development team, where there are other organisations out there, some of the very big people in, say, employability and some of those sorts of things, who just have whole bid writing teams.
Yes.
So it's quite hard to compete against that sometimes. But if you speak from the heart and you do your research and you design what you're going to do well and then write it well, you've every chance of winning. And it's always worth a go if it's something that fits with what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's great. Fantastic advice there. So first of all,
Buy Jamie's book as well. But Jamie's little publication is fantastic. I've already shared it with the Doncaster people on our course, and they are lapping it up, particularly people who are fairly new to procurement. They think it's fantastic. So there you go, Jamie. A little bit of endorsement back for you, because I've bought 10 copies so far, and there'll be more to come.
Okay, that's so kind of you to say, and thank you. And I really didn't expect you to say that, but thank you very much.
Honest folks, he didn't pay me to say that. That was genuinely meant.
Thank you, Kate. That's much appreciated. But some great advice from you there as well, in terms of proper preparation, evaluation of whether the contract is worth going for. I love your idea of the bid no bid matrix. That's fantastic, and it really is worth interrogating the bid, because it might look brilliant in loads of respects, but just one respect might mean it's really not worth going for. And then your your comparison with an exam, which is a comparison I also often make in terms of read the question and answer the questions. Answer the questions that they have asked rather than what you necessarily want to write. And I love the way you said it comes from the heart as well. If you're a social enterprise, if you're a small organisation, you don't have a bid writing team. You're writing this bid whilst you are doing your delivery as well of other contracts, whereas larger organisations, as you say, they might have someone or several people whose entire job is only bid writing. You've got to deliver as well. But if you're writing your bids from the heart and you've decided it's a bid worth going for, then you stand a great chance. So brilliant tips there, Kate. Thank you so much. Those, I think, will be very helpful indeed for folk listening to this. So I suppose final question but one. You mentioned your work with Girl Guiding, and that must be fascinating, and that perhaps might be quite time consuming in, as you say, a limited amount of spare time. You're one of these very busy people who, the old saying goes, if you want something done, ask a busy person. But tell us more about what you do with Girl Guiding and the commitment that you give, and how much time that involves, and how it makes a difference.
So it goes back a long way now. I started as a brownie, age 7. So given that I've now crossed the 60th birthday this year, that's quite a long time. And I started in... You start in leadership. One of the great things about Girl Guiding is we're very much... we used to, at one point, have a strapline, Girls in the Lead. And literally, I was the sixth of the brownie six, the patrol leader in the guides, and then a young leader at 16, and then moved on to adult leadership. And I've been doing that now for over 40 years as an adult leader. I train. I'm a trainer, so I'm quite often in Sheffield in that area, training guide leaders. And I've done all sorts of other roles. So the principal thing is I run a guide unit, and I've been running the unit in the Methodist church I attend in Chesley Street in the northeast now for over 40 years. I've now got, believe it or not, some grandchildren that are in, are the grandchildren of the girls that were first in when I started.
Oh, wow.
Guide. I know, terrifying, isn't it, really? And one of my other leaders, Lauren, who's 20, who's a fantastic role model for young women, is the daughter of one of the girls that I had in my guides too. So it's lovely. Do you know, the thing that's just so wonderful is to see those girls develop and grow.
Yes.
And a lot of what Girl Guiding's about is about helping girls become the citizens they can be for this country and internationally. So hopefully I've given a lot to help them. I'm very, one thing I am very proud of, there's one particular, she's quite old by now, but she was one of the young girls, came to me at 14 in the senior section, the Rangers. And she then went off and did a master's degree in entrepreneurship, and she's now run her own businesses. She's now working at the University of Teesside, supporting other people in entrepreneurship and things. And she said it was coming to Rangers and us giving us the freedom to choose what she wanted to do and make those things happen that put her on that entrepreneurial path. So that's great when you get things like that. I've done lots of enterprise stuff with my guides. They're wonderful. They come up with ideas, and they're far better salespeople than a lot of the adults around. We held a social enterprise festival at Sage Gateshead a year and a bit ago, and the guides were the best salespeople of all, which is phenomenal.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I'm not going to say how much time it takes, because it takes far more, really, than I should probably give in time. But what's good is I can use, I suppose, I've been able to use some of the skills I've developed in the workplace. Guiding's helped and contribute to that. I help nationally. I'm on the Council of Girl Guiding. I'm involved in the Nominations and Governance Committee. So, again, that helps. I bring some of the governance experience I've got from charity and social enterprise. And kind of guiding is a big social enterprise. Most of our income comes through membership subscriptions and our trading company that sells uniforms and other products. And then we run activity centres. So there's almost a great parallel with that. And then I've done international things with guiding, and not least helped to write the business plan for the Fifth World Centre in Africa for the World Association, which was a complete kind of bringing together of my guiding and my work world, which was fascinating. So, yeah, given me some amazing opportunities to I've travelled. I've been in Russia. I've trained guiders in Bermuda. That, I have to say, was absolutely wonderful for a week. So I mainly was indoors when there were beautiful beaches outside. And I've just had that opportunity to do so many things. So I would encourage any girls and young women and any adults to get involved and help, because it's a great organisation that makes a difference in the lives of girls and young women.
Fantastic. Well, that's great, because many of us might not be fully aware of how girl guiding is currently working with girls and young women, and the impact and the activities, the full range of activities that people have an opportunity to engage in thanks to girl guiding. So brilliant. Great to hear that, Kate. Thank you. Now, during the course of today's chat, I think you've given some fantastic advice to leaders and to social entrepreneurs. And you've talked about resilience. You've talked about planning. You've given some tips on winning contracts and much, much more. So I hesitate to ask for any more advice, but just in case there's anything that we have missed, if there's anything else you'd like to say in terms of advice for leaders, advice for social entrepreneurs, or lessons learned, or anything that, any tips you'd like to share. Have we captured anything, or is there anything you'd like to impart?
Well, I think there's just kind of one area which maybe I'm just fortunate that I'm naturally that way, but some people will talk about the world being made up of radiators and drains, and people with energy give energy to others, and I'd like to hope that that's what I do. If you can energise, infuse, inspire other people to see what can be done for this great world. Social enterprise is such an amazing model. If you think about it, you want to do good in the world in some way. You want to take something in society that's broken and make it better in some way. It might be the environment. It might be social. There's all of that. This world is not completely right for all of us, and many people have a really kind of poor deal in all of that. If we can find ways to produce a business model that gives a much more financially sustainable way of addressing those issues, then that is massive. And for me, we've got to do that with positivity, with energy, with enthusiasm. And the more people that kind of catch that bug of social enterprise in the nicest possible way, the bigger difference that we can make in the world. And we're not reliant on grants and donations, because there's I don't think it's completely decreasing, but that it is a tougher job to live in that world if you're from the kind of more charitable sector. The public sector has less funding available to do things it used to do, and can be often, if public, you know, the public sector delivering something, I'm not saying exclusively, but often that can actually perhaps increase dependence for people. Social enterprise is absolutely a way of increasing independence for people and giving them that opportunity to kind of own their own lives and make the difference for themselves with the right sort of support. So be enthusiastic, be energetic, be full of inspiration, and then more of us will be able to make that difference.
Right, that's an absolutely wonderful note to conclude on, Kate. Thank you very much for that, indeed. And the enthusiasm is palpable. It's clear in our chat today. It's clear whenever I talk with you and meet you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the phone today and join us live on the programme today, Kate. And I'm going to ask you if you can give your website address out and perhaps your Twitter address too, so that if people want to find out more about you, they're able to reach you.
Absolutely. So the website is socialenterpriseacumen.co.uk.
Great.
My own Twitter handle is at Kate Welsh, and we have at SocEntAcumen as well.
Brilliant. That's been fascinating. That's been great. Kate Welsh, thank you so much for joining us on air today. Thank you, Kate.
A pleasure. A little bit of connection back to Sheffield again. Thank you for the opportunity, Jamie. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too, Kate. And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We're going to play a very quick track of music. This is The Monitors. The track is Number One in Your Heart.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch, and joining us on the show today, we've had a live interview with Kate Welsh, Chief Executive of social enterprise Acumen CIC, and Kate has talked with us about resilience in social enterprise and leadership. She's talked about bidding for and delivering public sector contracts. She's talked about much, much more. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed the interview with Kate, then don't panic. The podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. So take a visit to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find the podcast. Last week's programme featured Steve Rimmer, co-founder and chief executive of Tickets for Good, ticketing platform, ticket website, which makes a contribution to causes and charities for every ticket sold. It's also all about inclusivity and diversity. Fascinating chat with Steve. So if you've missed that, you know where to find the podcast. Now, we will be back on air next Friday from 9 through to 10 a.m. So do tune in then. And remember, you can get in touch, because if you want to put yourself or someone else forward to be on the programme, or if there's something you'd like to comment on, then we'd love to hear from you. We have guests lined up for the next few weeks, but we're always interested in mentioning anything that you tell us of interest, and we would love to give it a shout. And so all you need to do is send me an email to jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send me a text, 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. And always really super keen to hear from you. And a report was launched earlier on this week, on Monday, about the value to Sheffield of the faith sector, something in the region of £11 million. And in terms of value, made to the sector. So a huge contribution there. What else has been going on? We mentioned at the start of the show today that the Sheffield Business Awards are open for entries, as are the Barnsley and Rotherham Business Awards and the Social Enterprise Awards. So take a look at those and start preparing your application and apply. We also mentioned that it was World Wi-Fi Day and that Sheffield City's free Wi-Fi has gone live this week. So that's it for today. Next up on Sheffield Live, our fantastic folk music programme, Thank Goodness It's Folk, on from 10 all the way through to noon. So tune in to that. And thanks so much to listening to the programme today. Thanks to our guest, Kate Welsh. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer. And we shall play out with a little bit of the Payroll Union. This is Mary Lampson.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.